Hey there. And this is Fish and Frank. And in the chair across from me is Captain Kale.
Good morning.
Oh, he's bright and lively today. I'm going to have to build up
that's,
for it.
That's a switch.
Yeah, I was, 6 minutes late for work. I got my another alarm clock. It's 2 days in a row the darn thing didn't go off. Now, it could be I'm just tired and didn't hear it, but...
That could be. I have to switch alarm clocks every couple of years.
Yeah, it's all of a sudden. Maybe I'm just getting used to the noise on it. I don't know. Ah, there we are. Yes, a little lively... Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's lively music, but it is music. Okay.
Get your foot tapping.
Is that what? Yeah, it does. Yes. So anyway, I'm gonna try and record some new music this week. Get the show off on a little better, little more unique foot.
There you go.
Been doing some stuff. Now you've been out and fishing quite a bit lately.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's going on in the wide world of fish?
Starting to see some improvements in the shark area. Yesterday we caught I think it was 10 sharks.
Okay, yeah. Now I'm quick without looking, what species were they? And question number one, will you take door number two or will you take the brand new car?
We had I want to say it was 3 or 4 black tips.
Okay.
One sharp nose, and the rest were black nose. The black nose are heavy in the harbor right now.
And that's weird, because 15, 20 years ago, black nose were pretty much a reef species offshore. Didn't really catch many of them in the harbor. Yeah. And now, over the last few years, they've kind of, every year we're seeing more and more of them in here. I don't get it.
And each year they're coming up further and further.
Really?
Last year, I didn't catch any black nose above Cape Hayes.
Right.
And this year I am.
I don't know what's going on. I hate to be the voice of gloom and doom, you know, but I kind of enjoy that too. But we're seeing so many different fish changing their living habits.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's kind of cool. I mean, it's great for us because, you know, Charlotte Harbor is, in my opinion, one of the most wonderful places in the world to fish.
I wholeheartedly agree with that.
But, when you start seeing fish changing their habits, there is that little alarm bell. You know, I wrote the article about, okay, why isn't there greenbacks? Well, we're killing them all. And I got a little bit of negative feedback on it, but I think the ringing of truth in that just kind of comes out.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird how you watch the whole world evolve when you do fishing and, you know, you hear about fish every day and you're talking to people about fishing. And like you, you had a nice day catching fish. And
yeah, absolutely.
So how big, the sharp nose, the black nose and stuff, I'm going to guess around 3 foot.
Yeah, everything was 3 to 4 foot. I like seeing the black tips coming in. They're one of my favorite sharks.
The fastest fish I've ever seen is a black tip.
Yeah.
It makes a bonefish look like he's doing quaaludes.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yep.
I mean, if you're out there, I've caught 30-inch bonefish, and it's a good run. It's a good run. I mean, you get that good burst of speed because you get your drag a little light. But a black tip, oh, my God. When that thing screams off, I mean, you watch the line throw water in the air.
Yeah, it's... That's your difference between your bonefish and your black tip. A bonefish swims fast to escape. A black tip swims fast to eat.
Anything
that swims fast to eat is always going to be a better fight than something that swims fast to escape.
Yeah, because there's only so much escape you got in you. But, you know, black tip is just, I was reading that thing in The Water Life about, you know, how you sensory deprivation can bring on... they actually need to see, hear, and smell for to really zone in on the fish. Once you take their hearing out, they're really not good predators.
Right, right. They have to have all their senses working.
And it's really kind of cool. The Waterlife had a great little article. It's nothing, you know, going to change your life, but it is great information on that. I think it must have come from Betty Stogler.
More than likely.
I would say that she's one of the smarter people I've ever met.
Yeah.
And Betty's our Sea Grant agent. And so.
And you kind of, I saw it yesterday on a small scale. Tide was coming in. If a shark dropped the bait and he was still on the tidal side, bang, right back on it because he could smell it.
Right.
Now, we had one shark that picked up the bait and ran towards Boca Grande against the current.
Right.
He dropped the bait. It took him probably a good 5 minutes
to come back, to come back and find it. Yeah.
Where the other ones, I mean, it was instantaneous because the tide was moving the scent away from the shark. He had to work harder to find it.
Yeah, he's got to cruise around and...
yeah, he can't smell it.
I would say it's kind of like the way we tell people, if you're going to fish in the Gulf, you've got to have a marker buoy because everything kind of looks the same.
Yeah.
And with the amount of shrimpers that work Charlotte Harbor, they keep that bottom drag so flat. You know, a fish is going to... If he can't smell where that bait is, and dead bait doesn't produce noise, and it's not clearly visible, so he's going to have to smell it to find it. And if he gets on the wrong side of the current, he's going to have to circle, 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 and look for it.
Good.
So that makes a lot of sense.
We got finally starting to see some butterfish out there. Weren't seeing them come up in the chum slick because the pinfish were too aggressive. But we started dropping sabiki rigs down for the big thread fins. And we started catching butterfish, small butterfish, but at least they're starting to show up.
And it's not that they're good bait. It's not that they're really, you want them for anything, but it's kind of a comfort level to let you know that things are okay in the harbor.
Yeah, things are coming. I like them in my chum slick. I want to see a chum slick full of butterfish and
skipjacks, leather jackets,
all those worthless fish.
Because
I want them, because it's commotion. It's something happening.
And it gives you that comfort to let you know the water's okay, everything's okay, that there is, even if there's something going on, it's that comfort level to know, yes, the fish are still here, we just maybe aren't seeing them for some reason. And there could be, even though, I have no idea what that just was, but one of the things that I think may be going on out there is seeing greenbacks less and less coming to the surface. More and more hiding down, and they could be changing their habits to survive. They might be leaving the flats, keeping out in the deep water.
Very well could be.
I mean, there's
why are the pinfish out there?
Yeah,
there's something going on that's causing everything to go deep.
Yeah,
something weird. I don't think it's us because it wouldn't be light switch like it was.
Well, it hasn't been exactly light switch. Everything's been happening little by little over the last few years. You know, the light switch comes into play when it hits a certain point of a progression of events, and then all of a sudden it becomes very apparent, and we think of light switch, but if it's been happening little by little over the last few years.
It's the weird thing is we're still getting reports of bait down south. We're getting reports of bait up in Tampa. A lot of guides have taken their client base up to Tampa.
And I will tell you, though, I do think, you know, we do get a lot of fishing pressure here because it is one of the most wonderful places on earth to fish. You know, so we get a lot of people fishing here. There's days where you go down the east side and it's
boat after boat.
About every 30 to 50 feet on every island, but it's only part of the year.
And we're a small body of water. How many
small and yes, but it's a massive harbor.
It is,
you know,
but it's how many of these lakes up north get this amount of pressure?
Oh, a lot.
You know,
when I was up Lake Hopatcon in New Jersey, you don't think of Jersey and beautiful fishing, but Jersey, like Pennsylvania, has got some absolutely gorgeous places in it. And you go out, when Mike and I would fish on Lake Hopatcon, you're out there, you got to get there at daybreak, and you got about 3 hours to fish, and then there's a 2-3 foot chop on the lake. And the wind's calm.
From all the boats.
It's just boat weight.
Yeah, we get that. Our lake was 92 miles of shoreline.
Right.
And lots of boat traffic, but not a whole lot of fishermen.
Yeah, it's a lot of weekend stuff. You go out during the week and it's nice.
Water skiing, you know, kneeboarding, tubing, that kind of thing, pleasure boating. Not a whole lot of fishing.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But here, the fishing is so good, and for the amount of people that fish and everything, there is a phenomenal amount of fish there. I mean, to go out and light tackle the sharks during the day is absolutely spectacular, and it's becoming a hugely popular sport.
One of the few places in the United States where you come that some people own more boats than cars.
Yeah, well, look at me. I have more boats than I do cars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you go through PGI and you see two boats on the lift in the guy's backyard, and he's got one vehicle in the driveway.
Yeah, I'm looking around trying to... I got to buy another truck, and I've been looking around trying to find a truck, and I hate buying vehicles. I don't mind buying boats. I understand it. You know, I get it.
I hate buying vehicles, too.
I don't care about a truck. I mean, I really don't. Yeah. If it hauls my skinny butt from one spot to the other, it's a great vehicle. Other than that, I really don't care. I've always been interested in guitars and fishing poles and boats and all that stuff. That's where all my, you know, I take my time up in it. But when you're trying to buy vehicles, what a nightmare. I don't know why I got into that. But anyway.
Because it's there.
Yeah, it's there. You know, random thoughts. I have no idea what happens to me. You know, I'm going to blame the radiation. I've got this great excuse nowadays. You know, when they stick radiation in your brain, you know, it allows you some leeway in the world.
Yeah.
Yes.
Those synapses aren't all firing.
I got 3 out of 8 that are doing pretty good. Yeah. The rest of them kind of intermittent. But back to the fishing. What have you been using for bait?
I've been using fresh and frozen ladyfish, Spanish mackerel, mullet, your normal harbor stuff. And that's what I usually do. Early in the shark season, I love squid wing and bonita because they're new to the harbor. And that's what they've been eating out in the ocean. When they come up into the harbor, they've been here for about a month. I switch over to our natural baits here in the harbor because that's what they're eating.
Yeah, the old fly fishermen match the hatch. When they first come in, they've been feeding on squid. People don't realize how reliant on squid sharks are.
Yeah.
Without squid, the sharks just don't have food.
I try and take all three. I want mullet, ladyfish, and Spanish mackerel.
Right.
Because they switch from day to day what they prefer.
And
yesterday, mullet didn't hit bottom.
Wow.
They were grabbing that before it would even touch bottom.
Cool.
The day before that, it was ladyfish.
Well, you tell people, adapt and overcome. And I've been hearing mullet doing excellent out by the intercoastal, golf, all that.
Yep.
And, excuse me, as you move up closer to harbor, I get more ladyfish, ladyfish, ladyfish. But we have a lot more ladyfish running around right now than
match
we do mullet up here.
Sure.
And you're kind of fishing those middle areas, you know, twixt and between the mullet, ladyfish stuff.
Exactly.
Heard huge... some really nice schools of finger mullet running around, a lot of small mullet, a few big mullet, some did escape the netting, but
some made it.
Some made it, you know. So but it's been pretty cool. Now, are you fishing? I've been hearing a lot about fishing on the bottom, cobia, shark, mostly bottom stuff. Now,
and
I've always
had
a bobber line.
We had a good cobia hit yesterday. Big run. And the bait pulled. And when I got the bait back, no teeth marks on it. You know, it looked like somebody took that chunk of ladyfish and tightened it down in a vise.
Yeah, just smashed it between two 4x.
Right.
Yeah.
And it wasn't offset. It didn't have an overbite.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a tarpon. And you can pretty much narrow that down if the teeth match. And there's no teeth bite marks. It's probably a cobia out there.
You know, people always wonder, how can a fish just crush the bait like that? But take human jaws. I mean, you can put a huge amount of pressure with your jaw.
Great-grandfather, not a tooth in his mouth, would sit there and eat an apple.
Yeah.
And take bites out of an apple like somebody that had teeth.
Yeah. kind of wore the gum back to a jawbone was out. Yeah.
And I mean, if you really don't realize how much pressure that some of these animals have, stick your hand in a cobia mouth.
Yeah.
They'll clamp down and show you.
Yeah, it's amazing the amount of crushing power they have. And it's kind of weird because you figure we have hands, so we don't really need our jaw muscles that much, and we can create such an amazing amount of power. If you have a creature without hands who's completely reliant on their jaw, for
pressure.
Everything,
yeah.
That's going to create amazing amounts of pressure.
I mean,
just thinking basic evolution, basic, you know, physics of the creature.
Yeah, especially sharks. I mean, amazing amount. And they don't even have bone jaws.
No, that's the craziest part about it. There's no bones in the fish.
Yeah, it's just cartilage, and they can still generate more pressure than we can with bone.
And with you take the, when people do the fillet, I said, remember, no rib bones.
Yeah.
You know, when you flay them out, the only hard part on it is that the backbone, the cartilage backbone.
Exactly.
And the rest of it's, how do they even sustain shape? It's, what a unique creature.
It is.
Remember, guys, no barbs on the hooks when you shark fish. We kind of lose track back and forth on different stuff, but Kale, myself, every other serious angler takes a J-hook for the shark, flattens the barb, and that way the hooks come out easily. And you want to get your hook back. You don't want to cause blood poisoning or anything. Cutting off the hook is okay if you're in danger of your hands or, you know, you don't want to lose an arm for getting a hook out of a shark.
Or but, causing any more damage to the shark.
Yeah, or causing undue damage. But anytime a hook can be removed, and J-hooks with a flattened barb are the best way when you're fishing these small sharks.
And it's
like tackle
sharks. As much as I preach circle hooks on all of the other fish that we educate people about, J-hooks on sharks, J-hooks with a barb pinched down, are far easier. Now,
well, let's go in.
I know we're going to get bashed by a lot of the big shark fishermen, the land-based guys. Land-based is something different. It's not very hard to take a circle hook out of a shark's jaw when he's laying on the sand.
Well,
take that same 13.5.
If you're fishing big sharks and you're throwing a big chunk of bait out and letting them run off with it, the circle hook is better because you're not holding the pole. You're not in contact with the fish. You're waiting for the fish to hit.
Right.
And if you use a J-hook, he's going to swallow. It's going to get in his stomach.
Sure.
You're going to tear the fish up. But for what we're doing in the harbor, holding the poles.
From a boat
in the harbor, holding the rod.
That's
the J-hook is easier to get out.
Nope. It is much easier to take a hook out of a big shark laying on the sand than it is when he's swimming around still.
Yeah, I would say I'm not one for grabbing the shark. And, you know, I can see how I could get him up on the beach, but I don't know if I got the cojones anymore to walk them back out in the water when they're alive. I don't have that kind of luck with it.
Like I said, I don't want to take a circle hook out of a big hammer or a big bowl at the side of the boat.
Right.
One lunge, you're a goner.
Right.
I've had 3-foot black tips when I'm reaching and grabbing the leader and have them halfway out of the water jump into my lap.
Yep.
With one swipe of their tail. That's all. What's that big one going to do?
Yeah. You know, and with me, I'd be lucky the fish would go, "Hey, Frank, you're a good guy, release me," and turn around, give me a little kiss goodbye, and take my leg off. You know?
Yeah,
that would be my luck. It wouldn't even be malicious. It would just be happening.
Nope.
I'm trying to get back to what size hooks are you using?
I'm using our normal A-dot pre-made shark leaders that we have. They work very well. I'm not a fan of single strand. Because single strand is very hard to handle.
It cuts my fingers.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm using a single strand, I use a very short leader and then back it up with a little bit of heavy mono and then tie it to my line. Just so I have something to hold on to.
But I'm out there trying to get pictures for the clients. I'm tagging the sharks. I need to control them.
Right.
So we stick with a plastic-coated multi-strand leader. It works that much better.
I will say, I would bet you'd get a percentage more fish if you had the single strand on it.
Probably.
I think you would get a percentage more, say 10% more hits or 15% more hits during the day.
Yeah.
But I think that it's so much easier to handle the cable, your fingers. That single strand, boy, you get that on your hand, that shark lunges.
Yeah.
It does. They use that, you know, a garrote, you know, that's how they, you know, kill people with that stuff.
I don't use braided line. Nothing but mono on my reels for shark. I use 40-pound mono. I know that sounds very, very light. Only 40-pound, but it serves two purposes. If you do your job, you're not going to break 40-pound mono on a shark.
Well, I use it on 200-pound tarpon.
That's why they put that little screw at the top of the reel and on the sides.
Yeah.
It's called drag. And if you loosen it, your line won't break.
Yeah. Now, I think braided line is raising a whole generation of winchermen.
Yes.
And not so much fishermen. Because before, if you had a 3,000, a 30 size reel, you were stuck with 10-pound test mono. You weren't getting, you could maybe get 12 on there, but by the time you put 15, 18, 20-pound test.
No line capacity.
It you had no line capacity, and it just wouldn't stay on the spool. You couldn't cast it through a wire.
No,
it's needed either a big reel for big line.
Like a slinky.
Yeah. So now with the Braden line, it's so thin that you can put 40-pound test on a 30-size reel and actually throw it and do stuff and just crank them back. And in some ways, the nostalgic in me was that it was kind of cool to have to be able to play, fight. It was part of the challenge, not, okay, I missed a fish, give me heavier line.
Yeah.
And I hear that pretty much 3, 4, 5 times a week. He broke me off, give me heavier line. Well, the whole mystique of the area, the whole challenge of it all is that you can't land every fish. It's what makes Charlotte Harbor one of the best places in the world to fish. You throw the line out
there. But that's what makes fishing, fishing. Hunting, I love hunting. I love fishing more. You're connected to that animal. Literally connected to that animal. And it is a toe-to-toe fight.
Right.
What advantage does that deer have? None. He can't shoot back at you.
I think that it would be more fun if deers could shoot the horns off their antler.
Yeah, there'd be a lot less hunters.
Like if they flip their head and, throw.
There'd be a lot less hunters.
No, I think there'd actually be more. Because I would go out and do it because, where you're facing, like shark fishing, you're facing, let's say death in an extreme case, but dismemberment.
Well, it's not just
injury.
That. It's apex predator against apex predator.
But that's what I'm saying.
You're connected to that animal. It's a tug of war.
And, you're trying to do everything you can to release this fish, keep him as lively and as healthy as possible with as little damage so you can both enjoy this fight again.
Yep.
And I'm not going to say they probably don't enjoy it too, because, they're a predator. They like a fight.
Unless you're a really bad hunter, you don't get to shoot that deer again next year.
Well, that was kind of me. It's one of the reasons I did quit hunting. I was pretty good most of the time, but I have an unusual bit of luck when it comes to them.
But with the shark, I can release it if I want and fight him again next year when he's bigger and badder.
Yeah,
and that's what I like about the fishing. But I still like those J hooks.
We get so lost.
We do. We do.
Where the heck were we? I was sitting here thinking.
We have to come back to where we were.
We were going. I asked about how big a hook it was, and now all of a sudden we're hunting and fighting deer.
I'm trying to find a good in between hook. We have big leaders. We have little leaders. It's hard to catch big sharks on little leaders.
Right.
It's almost impossible to catch little sharks on big leaders because the hook's too big.
It's a constant mix and match. And again, it's part of the allure, part of the mystique, part of the fun. And
I'm trying to find
when guys come
bit.
Down here, they're coming from up north and they say, I don't know anything about this. I say, that's the best part.
Yep.
That is the best part. And it's, I've been doing this 30 some odd years. You've been down here 12, 15 now, and it's still evolving, still learning, still looking for that thing. I love it. I absolutely, and the most fun you can have in the bait shop is to tell people we had a guy in and he did no good, and we re-rigged him, and he's got his fish, but he was in this morning complaining because he did get fish up to the boat. He hasn't successfully got one in the boat yet,
but at least he's getting him
up to the boat. He's in that middle stages.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was yesterday with the guys I fished. He's going to be taking me out more often for educational trips, but he just wanted to go catch fish because he had friends with him.
Right.
We were able to sabiki rig up about 24 threadfin yesterday. So I told him, go to the bridge at night. Catch yourself some tarpon, catch yourself some cobia. And I'm waiting for the call to see if they did any good yesterday.
Well, speaking of which, we're going to have to wrap this up because you got a client coming. You're off on a trip today, and he'll be here any minute. It's, 8:47.
He should be here,
hopefully. So, okay, well, anyway, I guess we're going to wrap this up. I'll get the producer here to get on his job, and let's see if the producer, there he goes. Yes, I need to fire the producer, but that's the one reason I'm self-employed. I can't fire me.
Right.
Anyway, Captain Kale, charter boat captain, you can go out on his boat and catch fish, or if you have your own boat, he does do instructional or just fun trips on your boat. Yep. And the nice part about that is you're not paying to run the boat, so
it's cheaper.
It's much less expensive.
And I don't have to clean anything.
Yeah, it's a wonderful way to go.
It is nice. I don't have to spend 2 hours when I get back cleaning the boat.
We're going to discuss this later, but we're going to have a whole discussion about this. I just heard something I'm not sure I should have heard. So anyway, Fish and Frank in amazement and wonderment of the world. And I guess, boys and girls, thank you so much for listening. And again, Captain Kale over there, this is Fish and Frank saying, we'll catch you on the next Radio Fishing. Bye-bye.